Nice to be outside. If some of you want to shift your seating since the sun has shifted, feel free to move into the sun or into the shade. I moved into the shade because I'm like the other Todd. I feel like something's always bad is happening to me if I'm in the sun. So I have that kind of skin, you know. So you know, last week I was at a dinner party, and I was seated next to a woman who had just returned from Patmos to visit her Greek relatives, and she went to the cave, because you know Patmos is where John, St. John, received the visions that became the Book of Revelation. And so while she was there, she went into the cave, reputedly identified as the cave where the visions were received and the book was written. And then she went on to a convent on the island nearby, and she just said it was such a powerful spiritual experience. There was something in the air. And she was very quick, however, to say that she does not describe herself as religious. She is spiritual, but not religious. And a lot of people say that about themselves. And part of the concern, of course, she has, and this will be familiar to us as well, is that religions, including Christianity, and churches seem judgmental and hypocritical, intolerant. And in fact, if you did survey people, as some have done, like those in the Barna Research Group and others, it is a broad impression. The first thing that comes to people's minds when they think of Christians, deservedly or not, is hypocritical and judgmental. Now, they do seem to still like Jesus, or at least their impressions of him. There is something about him, at least in their minds, that does not fall into that category. And as I was talking to this woman, and we were talking about this, we are both reminded that Jesus did say, "Do not judge, lest you be judged." Then, as the conversation went on, we actually began to agree that judgment was not actually a characteristic of really a particular group these days, that you and I live in an entire culture of judgment. And I think we only have to look as far as our reality TV shows, right, to see that daily you and I are invited to sit in judgment over people. It's entertainment. It's a pastime. Survivor. America's Next Top Model, Hell's Kitchen, American Idol, The Voice, So You Think You Can Dance, Bachelor and Bachelorette, I'm sorry if I'm stepping on toes, Celebrity Apprentice. I'm sure there are scores of other competition reality shows I'm unaware of on scores of other channels my TV doesn't carry. And of course, all these shows are not the same in their severity. But still, through them, you and I are constantly invited to sit in the judges' chairs. And sometimes we get to vote on the fate of others. So increasingly, we live in a culture where judgment, the freedom to comment on other people's lives, is a part of our daily lives. And right, this isn't just the media's fault, right? They're giving us what we want. There are certain pleasures associated with passing judgment on others or seeing others judged. And one of those pleasures, of course, is just the pathos, the drama of exclusion and banishment, right? So, you know, people are voted off the island, out of the kitchen, dropped from a relationship. And then, of course, if you watch any of these, the camera follows them as they sadly walk out of the auditorium or into a car that drives them away. And not though without an interview, asking them, how does it feel to be excluded, judged, and rejected? And of course, the pleasure we feel with this is cathartic for us, right? Catharsis is this strange blend of pity and fear, because all of us fear rejection. All of us fear being voted off the island in one way or another. And so we identify with that fear of others, and someone else is moving through it, and we are kind of cathartically feeling this pleasure and pain, identifying with them in their pain, but slightly relieved that it's not us. So that's one of the pleasures of these shows, the kind of pathos of exclusion. And it's an identifying pleasure. Of course, the other pleasure of judgment is not so great. It's more obviously selfish. It's the pleasures our egos feel when we get to judge someone as less than ourselves. There's pleasure in that. It's always been the easiest way to feel good about ourselves, right? Through gossip, criticism, making fun of others in front of others. And of course, social media has made this really easy. It's given us a big audience to judge others. We're emboldened to give our opinion on every person on the media radar, right? We can offer thumbs up, thumbs down, sarcastic or humorous dismissal, and it feels good. So we live in a culture of daily judgment now, probably more than ever before, which makes Jesus' words in the gospel passage today as relevant as they ever were. We're in a series this summer on who Jesus is. And I want to ask, what is Jesus talking about when he says, do not judge? And how can we become more like him in that way? Of course, you know, Jesus doesn't mean that we are never to make distinctions, never to evaluate, never to have discernment, never to call good good, never to call evil evil. The scriptures do warn us about trying to judge the hearts of others, though, right? The core of one another. So when the Corinthians were kind of, you know, judging their leaders, they were kind of have a so you think you can lead contest between Apollos and Paul, and he wrote back to them and said, you know, it is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. So there are warnings here and elsewhere in Scripture not to try and judge the core of the person, the heart of the person. We cannot see that. However, we are encouraged to judge generally as a skill for living. The same word, judge, krino, here in the text is found several other places positively. When Jesus tells the parable of the money lender and the two debtors, he tells the disciples, you have judged rightly, you have krinoed rightly, when you discern that the one who will love the money lender more is the one who owed him more. That is good judgment. When Jesus urges believers to settle matters of dispute before going to court, he encourages them to judge what is right, krino, in moral and ethical matters. To do any kind of analysis, you have to differentiate, you have to take things apart, you have to compare, you have to judge the relative merits of things. This is a daily wisdom skill. We cannot live without various forms of judging. I have to judge the intentions of people in my life to know if I'm safe. I have to judge the skills of others if I'm a teacher or a supervisor or a manager. I have to constantly discern the better from the good, the healthy from the destructive, the truth from falsehood. It's a part of our daily lives, these various actions of judging. But in these moments, there is also a great temptation. Why does Jesus have to warn us in his kind of manifesto of discipleship about this daily activity? Why does judgment sell so well? Why does it go viral? What is the appeal? Well, the truth is, of course, you and I are insecure creatures, right? And in our fallen efforts to secure ourselves, we are always seeking points of difference whereby we can create a contrast between ourselves and others. I'm going to say that again. We are insecure creatures. And in our insecurity, we are always seeking points of difference whereby we can create a contrast between ourselves and others. And I use the word seeking deliberately. It's a scriptural word, right? We see seeking all over the place. We see it in the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God." Or the anxious seeking he talks about in Matthew 6, that is the heart of worry. It's a favorite word because seeking in the scriptures kind of points to those deep desires in us that run our lives, the things we seek. Even when we're not thinking about it, we are desiring creatures, as James Smith said. And desiring creatures are always seeking something. We're like existential sharks, you know, we're kind of constantly on the move, constantly moving toward what we think is the good life, even if you and I haven't articulated it. It's deep in our hearts, and we are constantly moving to find it. Of course, we can discover often what is in our hearts simply by noticing where our mind drifts to during the day, how we spend our time, where we spend our money. I go to Pete's Coffee in the morning on 17th Street almost unfailingly, and sometimes there is a guy there with his dog. The guy's name is Richard. The dog's name is Erasmus. The dog, not the man, is a gorgeous Siberian husky. And I asked Richard how he got Erasmus. And he said he got him at the pound. And I was surprised. I said, "How did such a beautiful dog end up in the pound?" And he said, "Oh, no, there's lots of huskies there." And I said, "Well, why is that?" He says, "Huskies instinctively follow a scent. They can't help it. That means they're going to look for any way to get out of the yard or out of the house to follow the scent. They cannot not follow a scent. They will always move toward it, no matter what. So they escape constantly, and if they're not tagged, they end up in the pound." Well, I have to say, when it comes to judging, I'm a little like that husky. I mean, in my security, I am always picking up the scent of difference, looking for ways that I can distinguish myself from others. I kind of move toward them in my thoughts and in my conversations. For instance, I notice when people are naive because I like to feel sophisticated. I notice when people are wrong because I like to feel right. I notice when people are addicted to screens because I like to think of myself as bookish. Although you should see my Netflix and Amazon movie libraries. If I were to look at the log in my own eye, I would say I often judge, I follow the scent of difference for the sake of distinguishing myself, to place the equal to or greater sign between myself and others. And of course, this is the kind of judging that Jesus is talking about in our passage. Certainly speaking to those like some of the Pharisees who pointed out difference for the sake of exclusion and distinction. And it was all around them in the culture, right? Ancient Near East was stratified by distinctions of clean and unclean, righteous and unrighteous, men and women, Jews and Gentiles or Samaritans, the noble rich and the ignoble poor. It's a culture that in its fallenness was constantly tempted toward difference for the sake of distinction. Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount and throughout his ministry, and this is the important point, seemed to be moving the other way. So in Philippians 2 that you heard read this morning, we are told that Jesus had a different mindset. He was certainly different from everyone around him. He was God incarnate, right? But we're told he did not desire equality with God as something to be grabbed in front of other people. In the reading today, we're told he did not desire equality with God for his own advantage. We are told to have this mind, this way of looking at the world that is not through the lens of one-upsmanship, ambition, or distinction for the sake of self. And we see this elsewhere in the Sermon on the Mount, right? When Jesus teaches us the model prayer, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sinned against us." So sin or wounding not being an opportunity to set ourselves over and against someone, but to forgive, recognizing that we are just like them. If not in that sin, then in another. Before that, Jesus said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy." And the merciful are those who, when confronted with another person's guilt, sin, weakness, or failure, do not make grounds for exclusion. Mercy leaves the door open. It has a catch-and-release quality to it. Noticing sin, but also willing to release the person from being defined by it. You know, our temptation is to look for sin, especially when we see others in misfortune. What did they do to deserve that? Like the disciples come across the blind man and ask Jesus, was it him or his parents who sinned? And Jesus said, let's not go down that road. Let's look at this as an opportunity for healing. And you know, this mention of mercy or healing, this helps us know what to do with difference and judgment, what direction we should move. To see difference, to make judgments, if we make them, should be on the road to inclusion, salvation, and healing. When Bartimaeus the blind man calls out from the side of the road in Jericho and Jesus passing by, he says, "Son of David, have mercy on me." To have mercy is a cry for healing. When Eugene Peterson was asked, what is the best English word to translate salvation as you translated the entire Bible, he thought for a moment and he said, that would be the word healing. Salvation is most often best translated as healing. And of course, when we come across Jesus, coming across difference, lepers, sinners, prostitutes, Samaritans, children, he calls them into relationship with him. He takes the opportunity to move toward them rather than using difference to distinguish himself. And again, this does not mean that Jesus did not recognize the importance of differences in judgment. It was important for people to know that he was different. He was the Son of God. He told disciples, shake off the dust of a community who sends you away. He tells family members to hate their mothers and fathers if it comes down to a choice between that culture and the kingdom. Or for a church to judge a member that might no longer really want to submit to Jesus' teaching. But where there is judgment of this kind, there is always sorrow. It is not the way Jesus wanted to move. Otherwise, for Jesus, noticing difference was a chance for inclusion, healing, and salvation in the fullest sense. And we see this healing, saving direction in our passage today, right? So in about as close to being funny as Jesus gets to, the guy who worked with wood his whole life, he says, to move about in the world trying to secure ourselves by judging others is like trying to remove a speck of sawdust from someone else's eye when there's a 4x6 in your own. Okay, this is carpenter humor. Again, though, the joke assumes rightly the part we are called to serve. We actually are called to judge things rightly, helping others to see the obstacles to living faithfully and helping others remove them. The analogy of taking something out of someone else's eye, well, you know that is a delicate act of healing if you've ever tried to do that for someone else. What Jesus says here says if you move about in the world as someone who is noticing differences for the sake of your own distinction, you are entirely incapable of helping another person. I'm going to say that again. If you move about in the world judging differences for the sake of your own advantage, you are wholly incapable of seeing things well enough to help another person. You are blinded to reality, to what is true, and what is good. None of us want people who can't see digging their fingers into our eyes. Their judgments only do damage. So if judging, discerning, and evaluating are life skills we can't do without, on the one hand, and yet there is a huge temptation in their use on the other, how do we become like Jesus in this? How do we become people who judge for the sake of inclusion, healing, and salvation? Well, we're a little bit of a disadvantage here because it's already in us. right? Because of our fallen natures, we are insecure, and we are moving like existential sharks toward differences for the sake of our own advantage. And we live in a culture of judging day in and day out. It's already in us. What we need to do is be vigilant. For the devil, and yes, I believe in the devil, is always trying to take what is good, a wisdom skill, and turn it into something destructive. We must be vigilant to the temptations, resist them, and move the other way. So here's how it's going to work. The temptation is going to come upon you, usually in a social gathering, a private conversation, or at your keyboard. And you or someone else is going to notice something about another person, something they did, something they wore, something they said, some way they are, something they believe. And it's going to feel for a moment enticing. It's going to feel like somebody's taken a softball and just lobbed it up there, and you are ready with your bat, and it's going to just be so easy to hit that judgment out of the park. Here's what you need to do. Don't say anything. Just don't say anything. Don't type anything. We know from James that the epistle, James' epistle, that the tongue is a fire. Right? Later in Matthew 12, 26, Jesus says, this is a killer, by the way, we will be judged for every careless word. That, my friends, is a painful prospect. To have to revisit every careless and hurtful thing we said about another person. So you know what I do at my best? I take that passage from Philippians this morning that says, do nothing from selfishness and empty conceit, and I change it a little bit because do nothing is really hard. I say nothing from selfishness or empty conceit. When the opportunity presents itself, and I feel enticed by the opportunity to say something to my own advantage, I say, Todd, say nothing from selfishness or empty conceit. Now, because the best commands are not negative ones, but positive ones, I also want to move the other direction. And here's little things I try. I turn that moment of temptation to criticize into a chance to thank God for some good aspect of that person. You know what? There is always good things about people. So I turn it the other way. Lord, I thank you for that person's boldness. I thank you for that person's loyalty. I thank you for that person's difference from me. Or you know what I do? I look up at God, looking down at them in a kind of triangular gaze, and remember, God is loving this person as their child. I was about to say this, but God is looking down on this person as his or her child. So rather than focus sometimes on their failings, I take the opportunity to be reminded of my failings, knowing that my vocation, my first vocation, is my own growth and healing. And unless they've given me permission to speak into their lives, frankly, it's none of my business. It's just none of my business. My first calling is my growth and healing. And I pray for them instead of pray on them. And if they are in the room, I would hope I would reach out to them and include them. I want to move the other way. I want to go where Jesus is going. So I'll end with this encouragement. There is a sense that for those who can break the habit of judging others for their own advantage, they actually can come closer to enjoying the abundant life that Jesus talks about. You know, the early Desert Fathers frequently warned against idle words and speaking against others. And their manner of speaking themselves was very terse, very laconic, very stark. They got right to the point. And so I'll leave you with these words that promise peace if you and I can avoid judgment. Abbott Poeman says this, Never despise anybody. Never condemn anybody. Never speak evil of anyone, and the Lord will give you peace.